All right, so we have how to create a workshop today. So the first thing we want to do is assess what the purpose of the workshop is. What is the takeaway that you want the students to have? What it is a funneled idea that you want to zero in on the workshop? And we want to offer different points of view and different legs of the workshop, but at the same time, we also want to meet the title of the workshop, like today, come learn arm balances and so on, and try and keep it focused. So a piece of that sometimes is navigating the conversations that, you know, kind of organically spark up. Allow them, because that's fun. We don't want it to be rigid and timed to the minute. And so with that, I often recommend having your purpose of the workshop, but build into the schedule a little loosely based scheduled time, right? So that practitioners can chat with one another and share ideas and so on, and have it be a little less academic and more social in nature in that way, right? Maybe you have like a singing bowl. All right, everybody, and you do the little singing bowl to bring everybody back so that you can stay in line with what you've promised to present them in your workshop. Workshop timing, I like 1 to 2 hours, but probably would take 90 minutes to 2 hours. One doesn't genuinely seem to be enough to go over, present an idea, share an idea, have some time to chit-chat about that, enjoy the social level of that, where we can talk about, oh, you know, this came up last Tuesday when I was at, you know, soccer practice, or whatever examples might have. I encourage incorporating those rather than, I don't know, there's a squirrel factor in my workshops and they take off. Like, hold space for it, allow that to happen. It's nice for your practitioners to be able to be presented an idea, consider an idea, and then also share that idea back, whether it be to you as the teacher or to their peers. I feel the learning is just reached more ways that way. We also want to incorporate a workshop theme, right? So the theme doesn't necessarily mandate the timeline of the workshop, though. So if we have our theme is going to, I know we were talking about creating an APEX-centered course, and so we used the example wheel, and we talked about doing maybe some bridges on the way up to wheel and so on. If our theme was workshop theme, exploring backbends, for example, and the purpose would be preparing your practitioners for backbends and the different progressions and regressions of backbends, right? That we make sure that the theme doesn't become the entire timeline, right? It's sort of the salt and pepper on the main dish. Otherwise, it can be, overkill. You can put the workshop date in there, the venue details. So this is important. Where do you plan on having this workshop? Will greatly impact what this workshop is. We can have the same exact workshop, like, syllabus-wise, content-wise, but if we have it outside at Starved Rock versus inside the studio, then it's going to change what will be provided and what you need to bring. So I don't know that I necessarily offer a restorative yoga or a props workshops in the forest preserves. You know, you can, but it's not always ideal. And it's also not even always safe. Let's say, excuse me, we are playing around with Half Moon and we hand out our blocks. We brought our blocks. We have an SUV. We're prepared that way. We had our checklist. The blocks made it to Starved Rock. Check. First hurdle. We don't necessarily have a flat level service, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know that in line with this venue, which is why it's one of the first things that we address, that we want to do a balanced, centered workshop, right? That might be better served in a studio, depending on what you have. Now, that being said, we do have conference rooms when we have our workshops in Starved Rock, and even if it's a beautiful day outside, everyone wants to go outside, but we'll do that piece inside, and then maybe we'll go outside and we'll do a walking meditation, which is lovely. I know we've done like silent meals where we're all together and just exploring, being in companionship with one another inside silence. And that's quite lovely. That can be super hard for some, but then for others, it's like, wow, this is great. Because I know in my life, I'm always talking or listening. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of just like quiet time. Mm-hmm. I have to carve that in, right? And part of that is just learning and considering, I think maybe I'm going to try and have silent meals once a week, right? So like if that were your theme, integrating silence into your daily life, that would be a nice practice call to action for your workshop. If you string 8 hours of workshops together, you now have a day retreat, right? So what do you need? What do you need provided? What do you need to bring? What is the tuition? What is the class minimum and maximum? So you want to consider your tuition based on your minimum. So assuming your minimum's 4 and your tuition is 25, you know, if you're willing to do your workshop for 100, then that's your minimum and so on. Considering what you spend on items and things like that. I used to really do quite a bit, goodie bags, the whole spiel, but I've kind of come away from that a little bit. If I'm working with an intern who's excited about that sort of thing, I'll let them handle it and then maybe give them a piece of the kitty for doing that or whatever it might be. This is where it comes in nicely to work in partnership with somebody else. Right? Workshops, I feel, are best presented by 2 people with different gifts. You know, that person that has the checklist by them and that other person coming up with creative outside-the-box ideas. Bring those 2 people together in the same space and offer a workshop. And it can be really fun, right? Mixing it up and knowing that the world needs both and everything in between. So if you're at a conference center, you may then have available to you really beautiful AV equipment. I know we did a day retreat over the winter at the Embassy Suites 1 year. It had a really, really nice turnout. The people that wanted to make it a staycation weekend could. You know, the people that could just kind of get away for the 1 day could. You know, we did it for 3 days, like a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday thing. There was food there and all of that. And they had this amazing AV system that normally I wouldn't have access to. So then I spent more time on my AV, my slideshows and that kind of thing, because I had that, you know, I was able to play the videos and, you know, like Shiva Ray doing her moon salutations on that beautiful big screen with that great surround sound audio with the lights dimmed, you know. So consider what your venue is and how you can best use the stuff they have to build the flavor of your workshop. What do you need to bring? So considering what your maximum number is, it is important to have a maximum number. If you do decide to roll with the Yoga for Props workshops off-site, then you need to make sure you have enough props for everybody. Even if you say, okay, make sure you bring your own mat, you still need to make sure you bring some mat. And there's other things you need to bring, and that's included in this workbook, such as a first aid kit, extra water, some of the other fundamentals. Think about bringing a group of kindergarteners, right, on a field trip. Whatever's needed for there, and I'm sure like the district has a list, your local school district has a list. Like, wouldn't that be a great list, right? Because you never know what you might need. And then a brief workshop description. So this is going to be maybe just the one paragraph, few sentences of the total scene of what we're trying to offer here. This is what you would list on the schedule, social media, email campaigns, flyers, all of that kind of stuff. And trying to keep it as consistent as possible. So putting a little bit of thought into it before you start publishing it. I have learned from experience. One tip before we move on to the next piece here is, what do you need to be provided? I have had situations where I reach out and I'm like, so I'll need some blocks and straps. We have those, we're set. I arrive and they have like 8 mix-matched blocks of varying sizes, and the straps are all tangled into one big jumbled ball. So, right? So making sure you get clarity of what they have, how much they have, and are they open to your coming by, and just assessing the space so that you can visualize yourself being there prior to offering the workshop, right? This will go a long way. So making sure that you know what you're getting yourself and your practitioners into when you bring them offsite. That being said, it's a lot of fun to do, right? So there's just a little bit of housekeeping duties involved. And then we get to the creativity, my favorite part, the fun stuff, right? Inspiration. One, is this a lecture, practice, or both? So earlier I said, I feel like most workshops work well in a 2-hour frame. And that could even be an hour of practice and an hour of practicum, whether that be, you know, lecture-based, or we break out into groups and we practice those arm balances, or whatever it is we happen to do, deciding beforehand what that's going to be to help with your programming, timing, and layout. And this is also where it really comes nice if you do your workshops with a partner. So maybe you present, maybe the whole thing is 2 hours, and maybe your lecture is 50 minutes, and then there's like a 10-minute break, and then we have an hour-long practice, and we end with Shavasana, and, you know, then wake them up and then send them on their way, right? So considering what that's going to be. Next up is going to be, who is your audience? So you're going to want to find the workshop, who is your population? So who are the people showing up? Oftentimes, I find that it's best to promote my workshops to all of my audiences. So this might be my women's club, right? This might be my networking group. This might be the students of this studio. This might be my yoga teacher trainees. This might be my yoga teacher trainers in training, right? All there for a different purpose. And those are my favorite audiences, because then we bring in different walks of life, different points of view that help us break out of this is how we think about this. You know, like, can we hold space to open that up a little bit based in these experiences? And I think that's why workshops are so much fun. I do open them up to the public as well. So when you're creating your workshop, if you're considering, say, look, the arm balance is a nice example here, we're going to do a workshop on arm balances, it might be your practitioner, because they've been working on crow for a while, and that would present differently than if you're going to teach crow. So when offering this workshop, you want to offer in a way that includes everybody. And so usually I'll do like a stepped approach, where I'll say, all right, so if we're working on our crow, A, B, C, fill in the blank, right? You know, for those teachers in your room, right, you may want to consider A, B, C, fill in the blank. But too much of it, and it breaks up its flow. So I would almost offer a series of workshops where it'd be like, let's say a 2-hour workshop that's open to the public on arm balances. So we're going to have a lecture or an interactive of some sort. We're going to have a practice that includes some arm balances and so on. And then it closes to the public and opens only to the trainees now. Right? And so for them, that's a 4-hour experience, that's a half day experience. And this is a nice way to layer your time, and that you've already done most of the work, you've already secured the venue, you've already done all the marketing, you have all the stuff there. Why not add another layer? But really, the public audience, it wouldn't be appropriate for. You know, so how you, and I had learned this early on, you know. The hard way. So I tell you now, who's your audience? What are you passionate about sharing? You know, what's your drive? And if you're not sure, go back to the moment you decided to sign up for yoga teacher training. What was that? Right? Sometimes we lose sight of that. And I invite you to carry that throughout life, revisit it from time to time, adjust it, tweak it. Well, I started off just looking to master arm balances, and now I want to X film like ABC, whatever it might be, and so on, and honoring that. I think this goes a long way in helping us keep an eye on what our intention is, right? What is our purpose? What is the purpose of the workshop? It's one of the first questions asked on the worksheet for that reason. What do you want to do? What do I want to do? I want to make yoga available to as many people as possible, right? That doesn't really include, I want to personally be responsible for their mastery of the process, that's not my purpose. I have other people in my field that take the stick and run with that. That's not my purpose. I like to gather the people. I want to present it to as many people as I can, with permissions for them to take it and make it their own, so that they can become experts in their industry in these particular fields. And then I want to connect them with one another so they can all teach each other. And that's how I want to do it, right? So staying in line with what you want to do, what you're passionate about sharing, all of a sudden this makes us feel a lot less like work, you know? And suddenly, even if it is your full-time career and it is what you end up doing, it does not feel like work if you're sharing your passion. Right, and I think there's an energetic thing that's shared in the class when you're passionately sharing in a way that you want to do. Do understand, at one time I did try present granular learning because I felt that that was a standard that a trainer should be held to, and it was not fun. I didn't have the energy. I'm like, oh my God, let's go over the details now. You know, like, I'd rather just Patricia come teach them that part. I don't want to. That's why, and I think that's okay. Right? Giving ourselves permission to stay in the place of joy and teach what we love to teach. Like, what's wrong with that? When did that become a bad thing? I don't think we all have to be masters at everything. So make sure you're putting time into what you're passionate about sharing, that your workshops are reflective of that. And that's why all the workshops look different and is good. Okay, so what learning objective do you want the students to leave the workshop with? It is nice to have a bulleted point, a checklist for folks, like I'm coming to learn A, B, and C, fill in blank, and I did or did not learn A, B, and C, fill in blank. When you hand out your evaluation forms, it would be a nice place to include, like, how did you enjoy yourself? These were my learning objectives. Did we cover them? How are you feeling about it? Would you want more on this information? And so really what it does is it helps you identify who your audience is and what they would like future workshops to be about. You know, I feel like, you know, I love social media. I love that platform. I know there's haters out there, but I do. It helps me connect with people. I do see, though, a recent trend. They're called stories, probably not as recent as they are just recent to me. So the stories are these little blips, you know, just these little blips. And we don't really get in there to have deeper conversations or to talk about it. They're not meant to be like an interactive conversation the way I might have on Facebook. Like Instagram, I can't wrap my brain around it because I'm just looking at stuff. I don't even know. And it's muted. The volume's not on. Right. So it doesn't really have much value to me personally. I probably need to figure that out. But this same sort of thing, these stories are meant to capture as many people as possible, right? So let's talk about how that's relative to the learning objectives. Capture as many people as possible. So by promoting stories, it'll be shown on more people's news feed. And while that's great and there's a purpose for that, and I two thumbs up on that idea, that sounds fantastic, I would really rather just dive deeper with my current audience and allow it to organically grow. So that's my take on social media. I kind of develop friendships with people on that platform that encourage in-person interaction. That's you know what I'm trying for, and it has worked quite well for me because that's what I do. If you are throwing out workshops after workshop after workshop, right, then I think that's more of that story thing. You know, like, can I get more people to come to my workshops? Can I find new people to sign up? You know, I'm on all these different platforms, Instagram and social media, or Facebook, Twitter, Meetup, you know, all of them, to reach all the different audiences. I think that's similar to that stories kind of framework. But then at a certain point, you have an audience. Can you give that same audience more information? Can we dive deeper with the people already in front of you? So if you set up your learning objectives to be something you're super passionate about, which is why I asked that question first, right? It allows people to come and dip their toe into an idea. So like my Ayurveda teacher training began as M's health tips. And these were just me sharing recipes because people had been suggesting I do so for years. And then that became, all right, I'll do a video, right? And then that became, okay,
I'll create recipes. And then that became, wow, people might need a benefit of food prep day tips to actually implement these lives into their busy lives, right? And then that became, I think I'm building Ayurvedic training. I have all this knowledge. I'm passionate about it. I, you know, when no one's around, I'm usually reading about it or learning about it or taking a course on it or something, right? So if with our workshops, we're little by little putting ourselves in a position of not mastery of a topic, but, you know, in that direction, right? This is what I'm passionate about. So you have your people in front of you. You've given them your learning objectives. You've collected the evaluations from them, and you see they all really want to learn a little bit more about this one or that one. Or you see they all really enjoyed this particular component of your workshop. Then it would then make sense to send a follow-up email out to them that they can easily unsubscribe from. So use an email client so they can unsubscribe. You know, we just do that. That's just etiquette. But you can let them know, hey, you know, I'm going to do another one next month, and we're going to dive deeper on, say, objective number two, whatever that might have happened to have been, right? And I would recommend that this be not so much what the students want from you, but rather what you just couldn't wait to learn and share more about, right? So then your workshop, following your passion and what you love to do. So there's that one. So here's the schedule. We want to literally write welcome time, meet each other time, break, socialize time, lecture time, break, snack, bathroom. You know what I mean? Like, you don't write the word bathroom on the schedule. But leave enough time. Like, what are you going to do? You have a room with 20 people. You have two public bathrooms, and it's down the hall. A five-minute break does not translate to bathroom, right? So we want to be mindful of this stuff. We want to build in enough time. This is also, when I put my schedule together, I try and weave in free time because I like that sort of thing. So that might even say this time to that time from 12 to 1. Well, not, let's say 12 to 1. Let's say from 1 to 2, because lunch is 12 to 1, right? And then we have this 1 to 2 frame. And this can be optional. For those who want to take a long lunch, enjoy yourselves. For those of you that would like to come back and practice teach one another, come on by. We're going to be zooming in on Crow, right? That kind of thing. And then that way people can work within their own time and not feel rushed and booked. Because I have been to retreats that I needed a vacation after I finished, right? It's almost kind of like a conference powerhouse. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to lose sight of that, you know, mind-body connection, and that when do we have time to just take a break? Or maybe if your feedback on your evaluations form was, I loved everything, but I would have loved to be able to make it over to, you know, Lake Geneva Shops, and there was a wine tasting, it would have been lovely to have done that, you know, whatever it is, you know. And also providing on the schedule, maybe on the backside of the schedule, fun things to do in the area. Wouldn't that be nice? You know, you don't need to become a concierge. I'm not willing. I don't do that line of work. I don't even do it for myself. Really, I ask my concierge these things. But it is nice to have like a list for people to consider, like, oh, I didn't know there was gonna be a hiking tour. If I knew that, I would have brought my shoes, right? Things like that. So a little bit of research can go a long way, and also build in time for people to be able to do that stuff, but then also build in time for to give them something to do. Because otherwise, what might happen if it's Saturday and you have such a loose schedule and you wanted a weekend retreat, a Saturday and Sunday, it becomes really loose right around 4 o'clock. Then a lot of people just cut out. It's like, well, I don't know. I mean, there's dinner, and then there's that one thing at the end, the vision board thing at the end. I did want to do the vision board. I've been talking about doing the vision board for years, but I don't know. I should probably get home and get the laundry done. You know, so your schedule is really important to help people engage and all that the day has to offer. So again, moving that idea from a two-hour workshop to a day-long workshop, and how that could look and what that could be. And that's not 8 hours of programming. you know, you don't want 8 hours of cognitive work stacked, right? I agree. Okay, so post workshop checklist. So this isn't after the workshop's over. It's after you filled out this form. Run everything you do through Grammarly.com. It's free. It saves your files. I literally compose stuff there now. I don't even compose it in Word, because a lot of times Word will change my word, and now I don't even have a red squiggly line under it. Now it just doesn't make any sense. So now I author everything in Grammarly.com. That's where it goes. And then from there, it gets pasted into this manual or wherever it is it gets pasted. You know, and knowing that typos happen at the end of the day, that's probably the least of my concerns, truly. Other people feel differently about it. Spend as much time on that as you are passionate on the topic, I suppose. But we do, at the very least, want to run it through Grammarly.com. A second set of eyes can be very helpful. I usually try and bounce my ideas off someone. You know, whoever has 2 hours to give me, generally bribed with sushi or something like that. You know, like, I'm thinking about doing this. And then walk them through the process of what you have in mind. What often happens is they're like, ooh, wouldn't it be nice if we provided them with the link of the hiking trail that's right there? And then in the notes say, hey, if you're interested in the optional hiking trail, be sure to bring proper shoes, you know, that kind of thing. That's where the really yummy stuff comes in, is when I'm brainstorming with somebody and helps create a more complete experience. So I always recommend that. Lunch with a friend, the Grammarly.com. All right, promote social media. All right, I'm going to say it. I'm going to go ahead and take a position. I've been dancing around this for a while. If you are not on social media, you are going to have a hard time filling your classes and workshops. If you can find another avenue, stream, or way of doing that, I applaud you, and I invite you to please be sure to share that with me so that I can share that with my people. But at the end, I've been doing this a long time, and I've never seen lack of social media presence translate to full classes. Never. I've had thousands of students, hundreds of instructors. I don't even know how many classes, workshops, retreats I've done. I've lost count. And I've never seen not one go that did not offer 6 to 8 weeks of social media publicity prior to. Simply because people need to see it a few times before they even realize they see it. Right, there's studies there. You could explore that if you want. And then, you know, back in the day, we used to get mailed out postcards. So I don't know if you know about like marketing with postcards, but you really don't expect anybody to see your postcard till you've mailed it to their home 3 times. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's some trees and some stamps we can save. So check. It needs to be done. After that, they need to consider it, right? Think about it. Is it accessible to them? Time, money, whatever resources happen to be. What does that look like? Enough time in advance where, yeah, they could probably pull that off, take the day off work, get sitters for the kids, whatever needs to happen so that they can attend. So this promote on social media, I recommend 6 to 8 weeks before launching anything. Otherwise, you probably have 6 to 8 weeks of not a whole lot, right? And if you can find another way, again, I would love to hear it. I'd love to share it, and I will tell everybody I know that it can be done this way. This is absent a very, I would value social media presence at approximately $4,000 a month in Google Ads. That's about what I'd put it at. So if you have $4,000 in Google Ads and you don't like social media, roll with that. You know, you'll probably reach people. But outside that, I don't know where or how. Oftentimes, I have people sign up for stuff. They saw it on social media. Maybe they saw it on patch.com. Maybe they saw it in Positively Neighborville. Maybe a friend mentioned it. And then that was then the conversation. Oh, yeah, I think I may have seen something about that. Are you thinking about going? Right? So that's that. I also feel like if you bring a group of people together in a room, society these days, everything's so automated. There's not a lot of time built in for socialization. So we come in, we take off our shoes, we check in on the iPad, which I've since stopped because of this. And they take their mat, they do their practice. Maybe they have a question or not. They put their shoes on, they leave. Not talking to anybody. How can we build a community where people can find each other? so that it's easier maybe to start a friendship there and then see each other in class and then say, hey, are you going to that workshop? Are you going to that retreat? If so, do you want to carpool? Do you want to drive together or whatever, you know? So that this happens. And this is an investment in time in people on a platform that is current. You know, platforms have changed. Before social media, you know, we had all sorts of, I mean, through the decades, we had Pony Express. We shared ideas, right? We had the telephone. We had TV. We had TV ads, which, you know, in my day, that's where businesses shared their messages, through the commercials. And if you weren't a big corporation, you couldn't afford a commercial, you probably had a harder time. You know, then the mail, mailing out flyers. I've done flyers, and I've been doing this 10 years, and I would say that I'd be shocked if I captured 1% of my audience via postcards. This includes back in the day when I was still willing to go from mailbox to mailbox. I had purchased these plastic doorknob hangers that you put the little postcards in, right? I did that and everything, and I put it on everyone's door, and I wallpapered the whole entire town. Right? I've done it, guys. I'm telling you. Nothing. Crickets. And I think part of it is that people are just inundated with that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, honestly, when my stuff comes in, I take it and I put it right in the recycle bin. And I think, I wish there was a list I could get off and save those trees. You know, in the process that now requires for this to be recycled and everything else, because I care about those things. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I feel a digital file could have less mess, you know, and more impact. So that's it. That's my spiel. I'll bring it up again and claim I didn't in the future. Okay, so we want to, on our post-workshop checklist, schedule with the venue, right? And then more than once, follow up with the venue. This is big. I've done it. There's been an administrative change, and we're coming. And if I didn't place that phone call the day before and shimmy in a room that happened to have been empty, then I would add a group of people and know where to put them. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we follow up with the venue, you know, as well. Make sure that they have what we need. Make sure we have what they need. And I always kind of look at their checklist. Like, Star Rock sends me a checklist every year of everything that I want. And I look at their checklist. I'm like, wow, they even included water and everything. This is fantastic. I'm going to put it on my checklist. I'm going to let people know water and tea and coffee will be served. Right? That's just nice. That's just a nice thing to add in for people to know. And then share that with your people. Food will not bring a lunch, or these restaurants are available. We're going to be eating at this time and place. Prepare materials, obviously. So this is the nitty gritty. Going back to our create a class time, pull your classes from the classes you've already created. Fine tune them, add themes or what have you. But they're already created. Now would be a time for you to put together the programming for the day. You know, it would be a more useful use of your time, I think. And you can always tweak your class from that point. And then after the workshop, the follow-up with their attendees, thank you cards, emails, surveys, etc. I like SurveyMonkey. Mm-hmm. It's free. It's blind. I think when a survey is passed out and people write it down, they are more likely to turn it in. You're more likely to get it. But I would also follow that up with a different question, SurveyMonkey, you know, because that way it's anonymous and people don't feel bad. Nobody wants to make anybody feel bad. That's good. But if there's something that we can do better, wouldn't the idea be to know that, right? Especially if several people have been saying that and so on. So there's your post-workshop checklist. And then just a random place for notes. You know, in whatever format, you know, I put this in Sharpie marker. Here's your create a class. Hopefully you have an abundance of these from training, so you can just put that in right there, fine tune it a little bit and move on. And then that will really become the sum of your 300-hour program, is threading these workshops together and creating a whole, whether it be teacher training or day retreat or 4-day retreat or week-long retreat, whatever it is you aspire to do. So if you aspire to end up in Costa Rica teaching yoga on the beach, then maybe spend your time offering workshops that would work in that field at that time. you know, that kind of thing.
If you want to do retreats, right? A lot of people want to do retreats. If that's something you aspire to do in the future, then try and lay out your workshops in a way that would work on the beach. Right, so that time that you take now during training can translate over to whatever your hopes and dreams might be and so on. Whatever, if you want to open up a studio one day, then you probably want to have all sorts of different kinds of workshops and so on. And just making sure that the time you're spending is also in line with what your hopes and dreams are. Because, you know, I am nothing if not all about the hopes and dreams and so on. So.